Statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list, and the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB, 860 AM. I'm Don Beichel, Jr., here along with my good friend and co-host, Joanne Suppressi, who is calling in today since it is New Year's Eve. So, Joanne, welcome.
Welcome. So, yeah, thank you, Don. Yeah, I'm so excited. This is like one of my favorite days of the year. So New Year's Day is actually my favorite day.
So are you partying tonight? Is that what you're doing?
Well, I'm not really partying. I'm going out. I'm dressing up and going out and watching dueling pianos and going to watch some fireworks, but not too much partying. So how about you? What are you doing tonight?
Probably nothing much, but driving around.
Oh, yeah. This is a good money-making night.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't decided yet, so we'll see what I'm going to do. I got a lot going on because, as you know, we have a big event coming up next Saturday on January 8th, where our good friend Senator Mastriano is going to be making a big announcement. And luckily, we have him with us today. But before we bring him in, I just wanted to say that the portion of today's show is brought to you by Salvatore's Cucina at 1150 Bristol Oxford Valley Road, Levittown, PA. It's a BYOB establishment with classical Italian food. Sal can handle everything from party trays to birthday parties, baby showers, any event you would like. Sal's can host your next get-together with you and your friends. And the phone number at Sal's is 215-547-7000. So let's bring in our good friend and every week caller, Senator Doug Mastriano. And what we spoke with Senator Mastriano about today is what we would like, Joanne and I would like to do, is kind of give a year in review and a year going forward. So, Senator, welcome.
Thanks for having me on. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and your lovely bride.
Thank you.
Yes. So, yes, happy New Year. Year.
So before we get into the year in review, I mean, obviously we got a big year coming up, but personally, I understand there's a wedding in the future.
Yes, my son is getting married here pretty soon. I mean, it's pretty exciting. Wow.
It's a great thing when your kids get married. I mean, it really is.
So. Yeah, we're excited.
Thank you. He's got a great fiance, so we're excited.
Yeah, when my oldest son got married, they actually got married on Halloween night, and they did the whole theme of the wedding was Nightmare Before Christmas, and they dressed up like the characters from the movie and stuff. So it was really pretty fun. So
that's fun.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. So
what did you dress up as?
Who, me? No, I was in a tux. I was looking sharp.
Oh.
Trust me.
He kept it classy.
That's right. Yeah. So,
I love it. So,
Senator, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about is obviously everything that's happened in the past year. And so, obviously, before we get into that, and I'm going to be honest with you, I was looking at all the things you've accomplished from a legislative standpoint, and I ran out of paper. I mean, I got almost 2.5-3 pages full, and I probably could have kept on going. So
it's amazing how much you did in a year.
I know it is. It is pretty incredible. But so let's start obviously where the left likes to go with things. Let's start with January and January 6th. You were there, as was a lot of patriots there to peacefully protest what you felt and a lot of us feel was a coup of our election process. And I believe that's one of our most sacred rights that we have as a citizenship to be able to protest to our government. And what bothers me is that a lot of good people were painted by the acts of a few. I mean, there was thousands and thousands of people there. So why don't you talk about that day and why you were there along with other Patriots and what you, you know, why you went and what you did, what you did.
Well, so it really starts in November. On November 3rd, we had the election. You know, we went to bed and Donald Trump was up by almost 700,000 votes in Pennsylvania. And that was a lot more than what we saw in 2016. And as usual, the media wouldn't call it. So, but I went to bed knowing that we'd won. And then the next day you wake up and you see that the lead has evaporated, you know, and then come to find out they stopped counting in the major cities for a couple hours, shut everything down. And then come to find out there was 530,000 ballots dropped after they turned it back on, and only 3,290 of those 530,000 ballots went for Donald Trump. And so, and then people are writing me and telling me their experiences at the polling stations and whatnot, and they're saying, do something. And, you know, me imagining and assuming the best are like, surely the more senior senators, guys that have been doing this for 20, 30 years are going to do something. And they didn't do anything. So I held a hearing in Gettysburg the day before Thanksgiving, and it just blew the lid off of things. There was a lot of testimonies, and I'm sickened and disappointed by the media around the state that just would say it was baseless claims. I went through the list of my findings that I compiled, and they haven't debunked anything, and that's their job. I wish they would have went out there and said, yeah, this is either true or false. So rallies were held in D.C. in November. I was not there. It looked like a lot of, you know, a lot of energy, looked like an enjoyable experience. I won't call it fun. So I went to the December one. I was invited to speak at two events. One was the Jericho March, and then one was over in the Freedom Plaza. A great First Amendment protected event. And everyone saw the live streams, and people are like, hey, if there's another one, we want to go too. But, you know, can you bring a bus down because we don't want to drive? And then sure enough, there was one planned for January 6th. And it kept growing. I was invited to speak at several events around the Capitol, and it's protected by the First Amendment. You know, as long as you peacefully assemble, it's protected. And the left needs to remember that, because we remember how violent they were last summer, you know, two summers ago. And so anyway, went to hear Donald Trump. He spoke long. He spoke over the time where I was supposed to actually speak elsewhere, and then things went cross-eyed at the Capitol. And so for those who were there peacefully, don't be oppressed by the vicious, malicious, disgusting people on the left who want to paint you and call you names. If you did nothing wrong, did not participate in anything, you were there in a First Amendment event. If you came peacefully and left peacefully, you're protected by the law, and it needs to stop. And so these lunatics on the left, I want to call anyone they disagree with politically insurrectionists. That's a fascist approach, by the way, is you attack and diminish and belittle your political enemies. That's what the Nazis did in the 30s.
Right.
So you did nothing wrong. If you broke the law, you're going to have to get a lawyer and, you know, and deal with it. If you didn't break the law, like us, we went there, we came, we saw, and we like, and we left, you know. And that's protected by the First Amendment, period. So dealing with the oppression of the left, the Democrats went after a whole bunch of legislators around the nation, and I was among the chief ones they were trying to take down, and they admitted in an article just last month that their design was to get all 21 of us strong Republican conservatives that speak for the people to resign. And I was the one in Pennsylvania singled out. And they were disappointed that not only did I not resign, but also my popularity grew at the same time. And they were very aggravated in the article and said, we need a different approach. Because they did a poll, the Democrats did a poll to see which Republicans ahead for the gubernatorial. And as usual, as it always has been for the past 6-7 months, I'm ahead. And they said, wow, not only have we made him more popular, but his negatives are still single digit. How did this happen? And so that's God's grace. And also, that's because the people, they watch what the media did to Donald Trump, and they're not buying it anymore.
Well, one of the things that you always say are facts are stubborn things.
That's right.
And so people got to see how the left over the summer would justify, you know, people burning and looting, and they would try to say, okay, well, there were people there peacefully protesting. They have the right to do that. Don't judge them by the acts of a few. Yet they turned around and tried to do that to the people that we were there protesting peacefully, and they wanted to judge us on the acts of a few. So, you know, the hypocrisy is adamant, you know, when you see what they do. So,
you know, as to the crowd that was there, look, I haven't heard an accurate number, but to me, it looks like a million people, because when we were at the Ellipse by the White House, all I could see, all those to watch the monument, was a sea of people. You know, I tried to, I was running a little late there, and so I was trying to get, you know, to my seating, and it was hard to move through the people. There may have been up to a million. It was more people there than I saw when John Paul came to Philadelphia back in 82. You remember that?
Yes.
That was crazy. That was insane. And I think this was more people than even John Paul's visit. Prove me wrong. I don't know. But the bottom line is 99.9% of the people did no wrong. You need to knock off the name calling. The people that broke the laws, you know, they'll have to suffer consequences. But lay off the rest of us here, because we're Americans and we have the right to assemble peacefully and the right to assemble just as you do on the left. And the thing that really drives me crazy is the same pedophile organizations in CNN that were calling their people's riots, you know, mostly peaceful as the city's burning down behind a reporter. That's what we're dealing with here.
Right. Well, and the thing, and then I'll, you know, let Joanne jump in on this. It's hard to do when she's not in the studio. They continue to push this narrative that it was an insurrection. Well, I don't know what the definition of insurrection is, but the FBI stated that they confiscated zero weapons at this firearms at this insurrection. And then I read update, you know, I researched this before we came on the air, and even the Washington police, I think they said the total number of firearms that they confiscated was 3. Okay, so if this was an insurrection, the way the media crafts their narrative is astounding to me. They disregard the facts because it doesn't fit their agenda of what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Joanne.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that's just what amazes me is how the media has approached this situation. They are overplaying it and talking about it and all the commentary, but yet all of the riots throughout the summer, the previous summer, it's like crickets. You don't hear anything about that from like the MSN and, you know, CNN, all the main medias, and you don't hear anything about that. But that was really devastating to people's businesses, to people's properties. You know, there were even like old men who were beaten by some of these people. But, you know, I remember watching a video of an old man in a wheelchair. They went after him and they beat him up and knocked over his wheelchair, but that didn't make any media. But this has been overplayed. And I think I hope we've seen some people waking up and realizing that the media can't be trusted, you know? So that's one thing I'm hoping that people gather from this, at least, you know, is that, you know, you can't trust everything the media says. It's because your mom and dad may have watched the news in the kitchen at breakfast time in the past when you were a child, doesn't mean you have to keep trusting the media. So.
Yep. I mean, so obviously that happens and we continue to go on. And one of the things that you have been a champion for all this time, this year, I'm going to go down some of these things, but let's get right into one of the big things that we've been talking about is election integrity. I mean, you had the hearings in Gettysburg. A lot of stuff came out. January 6th, you know, that happened. That brought to light more things. You know, people became aware and awake of what was going on. And yet you had some people in the Republican establishment that really didn't want any of this to happen. Okay, so let's continue on. One of the things that you were working on was a forensic audit of the election here in Pennsylvania. Let's kind of go through that a little bit, how it started, how it was progressing, and then how you had the rug pulled out from under you and the people of Pennsylvania kind of, for lack of a better word, got screwed.
Yeah, so since my hearing, really, on the 25th of November, I led personally the efforts to have transparency and integrity in the election. Because obviously a lot of things went wrong. And then meanwhile, I have to tolerate the resistance of some in leadership, and you know, like for instance, Jay Corman, of blocking that. And then, of course, the judgment and condemnation of the Democrats in the Senate saying, and I quote, "There was no fraud in this election. It was a perfect election." Out of Philadelphia, coming out of that mouth. I mean, it's just disgusting that they could be so dishonest. And so this doesn't help things. We have oversight. As a senator, I have oversight and constitutional responsibility to look into these allegations and to be blocked from people who have an axe to grind politically on the Republican Democrat side is repugnant. Okay. So we get through December, you know, it looks like we might have enough votes in the Senate if Congress kicks it back to Pennsylvania to do a 10-day review, which I think would have been fantastic, and it would put to rest, I think, a lot of our concerns. But those who broke into the Capitol and broke the law, they took away our last constitutional and peaceful way to deal with this this whole issue. Those that did that, they upended the apple cart. We had one last chance on the 6th of January during the vote to certify by Congress the delegates and the election results. So the idea that any Republican that cared about election integrity would go down there and cause trouble, it defies reason and logic, because our whole point was to support our congressmen and congresswomen in their vote to asking for these to get kicked back to the 6th battleground state.
Right.
I don't know. You know, I mentioned that to one of the old reporters that's been around for a good time. Decent guy. I'm not making fun of him. I'm saying it old school. Even though he's a Democrat, he is pretty fair when he reports. And when I mentioned that to him a month or two ago, he goes, "Well, I never thought about that." I'm like, "You've got to be kidding me. Really? What? Why were we down there? We were down there to support election integrity and to ask that the states be given one more chance by an act of Congress to have a 10-day pause, a 10-day extension to review what happened."
Right. And, well, his surprise kind of validates what we've been saying, is that the media had their own narrative and they never wanted to look another way. So continue on with how you were progressing with an audit and election integrity and stuff throughout the year.
It brings so much that happened last year. I mean, it brings to mind, I got to go back a month again. So you know, I have my hearing. Thanksgiving happens, and then I find out at 11 p.m. on the 30th of November, we're not in session anymore. We're done. The General Assembly's, you know, home for a month and not until I'm back again. So then I'm trying to work with leadership there to extend, to have an emergency session so we come back together to deal with the election results. And there's no action. Nothing happens.
Right.
So we're losing time. And every time we do something, I feel like I'm two steps behind the media and the Democrats. They're constantly, they've put a lot of thought into this, evidently, and I'm not speaking conspiracy. I'm thinking they have their act together constitutionally. So then we finally get back into session in January, and then we're sitting in caucus. Basically, hey, we're going to have hearings, so let's see what comes out of the House and Senate hearings on voting reform. The House hearings were quite good. I thought the Senate ones could have done a bit more. Okay, Doug, now let's wait for the report. Oh, when's the report coming out? In the spring. Okay, now we're looking at May. Okay, June comes around. It's time to do something. Oh, Doug, let's wait till we have the budget leverage. Let's wait till we have the budget done with Governor Wolf. We don't want this to drag through the summer. I'm like, this sucks. In the meantime, I fly to Arizona. I see what they're doing. We need to do that here. I have the plan in defiance of the direction of Jake Corman, President Pro Tem of the Senate. I issue letters to three counties to force this process to begin. And then when we finally get to issuing subpoenas, of course, we know all the drama. Senator Corman steps in and he undercuts the whole process, fills my meetings, locks me out of the voting committee room so I can't issue a subpoena. And then it's done. There will be no forensic audit of Pennsylvania in the model of Arizona. That will not happen.
You know, but yet they go around saying that they were concerned about election integrity and the people of Pennsylvania, and it was really just a stalling tactic for Senator Corman to basically undercut you so he can declare he's going to run for governor of all things. I mean, it cracks me up about him with that whole thing.
And you called that back in the early summer. You saw, you heard me talk about the games, and you called it right. You said he's got an agenda, and he did.
It's just a shame. Now, before we go on, I do want to touch on one thing that I noticed. One of the bills that you presented was to allow the legislature to come back into session in an emergency situation. And so I want people to understand that you are addressing different things. So, I mean, this is, people need to understand that, people that are talented and that have the will of the people at their core can walk and chew gum at the same time. So not only are you, at this point, I'm going to still say contemplating their run for governor. you also have been putting forth numerous pieces of legislation. So one of the ones I want to talk about when we come back from this short break, I want to get into four bills that you have drafted and co-primed, SB 884, SB 735, SB 573, and SB 819, 821. So when we come back, we're going to talk about that with Senator Mastriano. I'm Don Beuschel Jr. and Joanne Cipressi here on The Conservative Voice.
Hi, this is Don from The Conservative Voice. Are you looking for new business cards? Need new menus for your restaurant? Signs old and outdated? Employees need new shirts? Cars, trucks, and vans need new signage? Look no further than Mann Customwear. Located at 2250 State Road in Bensalem, Pennsylvania, Mann Customwear can fill all those needs and much more. At Mann Customwear, the owner, Mark, takes great pride in providing his customers with a superior product that is sure to catch the eye of potential customers and wow your existing clients. So if you're looking for a change, if you're looking to increase business and visibility, reach out to Mark at Mann Customwear. He can be reached at 215-651-8932, by email at markcolt45@hotmail.com, or on the web at www.mancustomware.com. Mann Customwear, your one-stop shop for all your design and printing needs.
This is Joanne from The Conservative Voice.
And this is Don from The Conservative Voice. Happy holidays and Happy New Year to everybody.
And welcome back here to The Conservative Voice. And here we are here with State Senator Doug Mastriano. So Senator, before we left, I mentioned four bills that you have put together and have been either a sponsor or co-sponsor with to safeguard future elections in the state of Pennsylvania. So the first one is SB 884, which is basically a constitutional amendment to roll back Act 77. So let's just get into these bills, and this is some of the things that you've done through the year to help the people of Pennsylvania.
And this is a different world of view that we have here. So in the military members know, because we come and go. We don't sit in an organization normally for years on end. Usually you have a 3 or 4 year assignment somewhere. And the goal is that you leave your unit and organization better than how you got it. And so that's always the view. So you go in and you fix problems. So a lot of times you hit an organization that's fallen apart because of bad leadership, and you become a nail and you're looking for, you become a hammer looking for nails to fix. And so as a legislator here, for instance, and this is not a ding in anybody's perspective, the guy I replaced was in the Senate for 10 years. And in 10 years, he passed one bill into law. In my first year, I did three bills into law, all good bills, move over law, veteran courts, all decent stuff. And so the goal is we see problems, we've identified problems, and politicians will sit around and dither and moan and complain like Tom Wolf has done. He's just wringing his hands and honestly just complaining. And the leaders identify problems and trying to fix them. And so Act 77, and unlike all the stupid, ignorant, naive talking points of those cute guys running out there, it was not some ploy by the Republicans to compromise our election. The election was compromised by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court and by Tom Wolf's administration. And I've talked about that ad nauseum. And anyone who doesn't grasp that reality now, I can't help you. But because of that compromise of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and because of being undermined by our Secretary of State of the Wolf administration here, it needs to be repealed. It needs to go away. It's fractured and compromised our election, and so we need to reset.
Oh, absolutely correct. And to your point, one of the four bills, SB 819-8-821, you've introduced that too, or co-sponsor of that, removes the Secretary of State from the oversight of elections and establishes an election commission. I mean, people don't realize the role that the Secretary of State played in what happened in November of 2020. Let's go into that, and what did she do, and obviously what this piece of legislation would prevent from happening in the future.
So unlike most other states, our Secretary of State is appointed by the governor, and that's fine and okay if the governor is going to put somebody in there that's competent. But Tom Wolf has put in partisan hacks, people who don't have the best interests of the election, you know, in their mind. They are extremely partisan. And please do remember, you know, look at the vote for the confirmation of Levine as Secretary of Health. It was unanimous. I don't think there was any no votes. That was before my time. And then when I was there for Kathleen Buchvar, only six of us were no on her. So why do Republicans, why do we rubber stamp in these approvals of the cabinet members? And that's because, you know, we're told by leadership, Tom Wolf should have whoever he wants. No, he should not. He should have people, we could disagree with him politically, but he should have people actually competent.
Right.
You know, that to appoint people like Kathleen Buchvar, who had a history of being a partisan, I'm trying to think of some other folks here. The director now of the Turnpike Commission, you know, I disagree with him. I don't think he has good business practices here, but I threw him a softball. I don't play stump the chump like in D.C. they do, you know, like gotcha, so you can have a cute video clip. I don't do that. That's juvenile. But I simply asked him, tell me your vision for the Turnpike Commission before we vote here, and tell me what your plans are to tighten it up, because there's so many issues with the Turnpike Commission. And he had no vision or strategy. Or he just kept on saying, I'm going to reimagine. And he said reimagine about four or five times. And I'm like, you know, I'm a no vote on you because you have no plan. Then I'm not going to be a rubber stamp. And I think there was only four of us that were no votes on him. But many issues of the election have come up. And so we need to get the Secretary of State out, since it's become a partisan tool job. Kathleen Buchvar, what did she do? On the 23rd of October, she allowed the curing of ballots. And this is unconscionable to me as somebody who voted most of his life by absentee ballot, you know, and that's, by the way, Act 77 was basically an expansion of the absentee ballot. You know, it required the same protections that were removed. And so Kathleen Buchvar allowed ballots that were incorrectly filled out to be corrected at polling stations or in county offices. For veterans, we're not afforded that blessing. We're not afforded. We're told if the ballot's incorrectly filled out, that it'll be set aside and tossed. It won't be counted.
I wanted to just, before we get off of what she did there, also, she only did that in certain Democratic counties, if I'm correct. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, so she gave that advantage to about six Democrat counties. And then belatedly, like the night before the election, I think kind of mentioned that to all the counties. So obviously, it gave a great advantage by about 2 weeks, a week and a half to Democrat counties. Correct me if I'm wrong here, because we're talking about the 23rd of October of last year, and then, of course, the day before the election of last year as well. These changes were made at 10 p.m.
Right.
Additionally, the figures I saw of the Zuckbucks, you know, Zuckerberg apparently threw millions of dollars to help our election, maybe to influence our election, and that disproportionately advantaged the Democrat counties. So that's why I'm asking that we pull Buchvar out of the election process here and put it into the hands of a bipartisan commission.
Yeah, I think it would be a great thing. Joanne, you have anything you want to jump in on here?
Yeah, I was just reading that she also made that threat to all 67 counties that if they participated in the elections, that they would have their machines automatically decertified and retired before the next election. So, I mean, that to me, it's just a red flag. It doesn't show that she really wanted this to happen.
Yeah, and that was bolstered by also the replacement of Buchvar, DeGraffenreich. Of course, Buchvar had to resign in shame for failing to advertise a constitutional amendment, that would affect the people that had been sexually assaulted as kids. And so the Wolf administration is complete catastrophe. And so DeGraffenreich, basically, I'm coming in with my audit. She said, if any counties cooperate with Mastriano, I'm paraphrasing just so people understand, if any of you cooperate with Mastriano's coming subpoenas, we're going to decertify your voting machines. Now, you put yourself in the shoes of the county commissioners. Where the heck are you going to get the money to replace those machines? And so that was a real threat, and that put the fear of God in several of the counties that I had hoped to look for, you know. And I'm basically telling them, we'll get the money for your machines. We just need to get some action here to find out what happened, if our machines are compromised or not.
Right.
Now, look, so also we had issues with poll watchers, especially in Philadelphia, and it was not a baseless claim, media. I have video, and I had one of the lawyers that was blocked physically from going into a polling station, and he showed me his credentials. He had them on camera back on election day 2 years ago. And one of my changes to our voting laws, of course, is to increase and empower poll watchers, because yes, we need accountability. We know there's several hundred thousand votes in Philadelphia that there was no Republican eyeballs physically within proximity to see what was being processed.
And that was SB 573, which would expand the number of poll watchers and would strengthen penalties on officials who block or impede them. That's one of the bills that you introduced.
And I quote from Democrat, one of my Democrat colleagues has a sign on her door, you know, democracy dies in darkness. She's quoting from Washington Post. Well, you know, we're not a democracy, but I'll go ahead and run with it. Yes, our democracy, quote unquote, will die in darkness. And this is darkness. And they're complicit in part of that, because are they afraid of the outcome? What are they afraid of? If nothing went wrong, if this was a perfect election, there was no fraud, as one of my colleagues constantly says on the floor of the Senate, then just open up the books and prove me wrong, and you can have a good laugh. Doug, that was a waste of time, and we told you, but we know better than that.
So the fourth part of those four bills, and I want you to explain to people how this is going to work. It was SB 735, which was a constitutional amendment to mandate voter ID. And I think what we need to realize here is we're living in a different legislative world right now. So one of the tools that you have come up with, and we were successful, we lost Senator Mastriano. I think he's calling back. They're getting you back on the line, Senator. Yeah, hang on just 1 second. Yeah. Okay, you're back. We're talking about SB 735, the constitutional amendment to mandate voter ID. But I want you to explain to people that we're living in a different legislative world right now. So one of the tools that you and your colleagues have come up with is to put the choice back into the hands of the people, which we were successful in doing last May 18th by taking the emergency powers away from Governor Wolf. So we're going the constitutional amendment route. So explain the voter ID and how the process is going to work.
Well, that was just the thing. If everyone remembers 836, you know, John 836, the freedom bill, Jesus set you free, you're free indeed. We wanted to restore our freedom with Bill 836, and we passed it, and then the governor vetoed it. And so our next recourse was a constitutional referendum, which the people of Pennsylvania rose up and supported and took their powers back limited Governor Wolf's supreme powers, and he was, you know, very upset by that. And so then I'm talking to my colleagues, and in this case here's Senator Judy Ward. She had a regular bill for voter ID, and I'm like, Judy, yeah, keep that bill because it could run faster, but the governor will probably veto it. We still need to run it, but how about a constitutional amendment? She's like, yes, and she goes, I'll include you as a prime sponsor, which was fantastic of her. And so our desire is to do a constitutional amendment that will go on a ballot in a year or two, depending how fast we move it, and then the people decide on this, and hopefully that will be strong enough to prevent the Supreme Court from throwing it out as they did in 2012.
Right. So I think that the thing that people need to realize is that you don't let these small obstacles stand in the way of supporting the people of Pennsylvania. You have definitely figured out a way to put the choice back into the hands of the people, which is really what your whole life has been about.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, we find all kinds of obstacles. We'll work, you know, months on a plan. Like I developed a campaign plan invading Iraq through Turkey. It was, I was the lead planner for it. And there's constantly obstacles, you know, that the Erdogan, who's still there, ironically, you know, he had issues with some of our concepts that we'd have to adjust. of course, the reality on the ground, the Turkish parliament. And so you always have to adapt and overcome. There's a saying that we have that no plan survives first contact, and that's true. So if you can't win through regular legislation, and we got to stop being so pragmatic, quote unquote, we still need to run the bill and have Wolf and the Democrats own by being a no or a veto, but then find a new way. And so Governor Wolf showed us a new way, you know, by resisting and blocking us and by trampling on our freedoms here. We found a way to put the power back in the hands of the people. Our Constitution is exactly right. And our Declaration as well, that the people, that the government derives its power from the consent of the people. And how we did not consent was by taking our powers back through a constitutional referendum. And I do believe, you know, lesson learned, looking at how, you know, voting reform was abused and overthrown by Wolf in the Supreme Court, I do believe that any major changes in the future to our voting laws should be a constitutional referendum. That being said, if there's a good bill going through, obviously I'm going to get behind it because we need action now. But, you know, if I was a president of the Senate, I'd be like, okay, we need to do these referendums here so people can decide.
Well, and I think that's important for people to realize that besides the gubernatorial election that's coming up, they have to pay attention to both their state house races and their Senate races, because and when in the future our Supreme Court races, because these people, you know, are the ones that when we don't have enough votes to overturn a veto, then that's on us, and we have to start paying attention. I think we lost Joanne, so we'll just keep going.
Okay, that
and, well, no technical stuff, you know. So let's so a couple of the ones I was looking at, which I think here's one that I thought was good from a pragmatic standpoint, especially with what's going on with inflation and stuff right now. You have legislation to indefinitely end automatic cost of living pay raises for the governor, the legislators, judges, and cabinet officials. Where is that as far as, is it moving? Is it stalled? What's going on with that?
Yeah, so I only recently introduced that. Okay, so what happened here? I think it was in 2005, literally under cover of darkness, that the General Assembly voted themselves a pay raise. And as a result of that, many of those senators and many reps lost their seats in the next election. And so the way that's circumvented now is there's automatic cost of living allowances. That whole thing was voted on before I even, you know, was a senator. I was still a colonel in the Army. And so suddenly I get notification that we're all getting pay raises. And I'm like, what the hell is this? Why would we do this in the middle of an economic crisis? And well, it's automatic. I'm like, okay, that needs to end. And so politicians found a way to get around of, you know, voting under cover of darkness to give themselves a pay raise, which just sounds terrible. And so, and you know, Pennsylvania is one of the, you know, most expensive general assemblies in the nation. And by the way, any gubernatorial candidate out there that's running their mouth and says, I will cut the expense and size of the, you know, the House and the Senate, that's either chicanery, deception, or ignorance, because there's no way constitutionally a governor can do that to an equal power, you know, in our system of government. That's ridiculous nonsense here. But anyway, we need to get rid of the automatic increase for senators and House reps and the governor.
It's fiscal responsibility. I mean, you know, and I know you're a proponent of that. And one of the things that you've talked about was the suspension or elimination of the gas tax, and I do want to get into that one. But so a couple of bills that you that have passed that you have worked on was the move over law, which was SB 1281, and and the Affordable Insulin Act, which was SB 957. And again, probably not the most shiny bills, since everybody's talking about, you know, election integrity and voter fraud and all that stuff like that, but important to people that we care about, police officers, construction workers, so forth and so on, EMTs, and of course people that have diabetes and stuff like that. So let's discuss those before we go to break.
Yeah, for the suspension of the gas tax, and I'm with people because, you know, I posted that we need to spend that. And I talked about my bill, and they're like, you know, repeal it, end it. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm down with that. Let's start, though. That's realistic. We could probably get a suspension in if there's enough pressure put on some people in leadership. I pulled in at a gas pump. Somebody had a pickup truck was there, and he had pumped 26 gallons in there. And I looked at the pump, and it was just shy of $100 of gas to fill up his truck. $96. And so I looked at that, and $13 of that 96 went to Harrisburg, our famous gas tax, and $7 of that went to the federal government. That's just unconscionable. You know it's a problem when gas is like a bargain in Maryland. I'm really close to Maryland here. You know, when you go down to People's Republic of Maryland, and it's like, wow, gas is fantastic here. And we were told by the Republicans now, you can't blame Tom Wolf for this one here in 2015. This gas tax, Republican governor too, this will fix our roads. We promise this will, you know, be the panacea. Never again.
Right.
And, you know, really, really, come on.
Well, that's what they always want to say, that, you know, we'll pass this tax and we'll fix the roads because everybody knows what Pennsylvania roads are like. But, you know, for some reason, once the tax gets in there, the money never goes to where it's supposed to go.
Yes.
Knock, knock, Philadelphia with the soda tax and kindergarten. But that's a whole nother can of worms. So then the other two bills was the Affordable Insulin Act and the Move Over Law. Let's talk about those because I think that's important to people's everyday lives.
One of my local tow truck operators, Tom Bricker, you know, contacted me, and we sat down in the office, and he was like, you know, I've lost a lot of friends. A lot of my friends got, you know, hit in accidents on the side of 81 in my case here, and I've had to constantly jump out of the way of cars that want to weave into me as I'm trying to get, you know, rescue people off the sides of the roads. And even state police, my state police here are fantastic. They'll pull up behind my truckers and put their lights on, but even sometimes they're hit. And so we need to increase the penalties, the laws. And so now the move over laws, if you see flashing lights, you're supposed to slow down and move over to the left lane. I get it. Sometimes, and there's a lot of people hogging a left lane. I get it. Then if you're stuck in the right lane, you can't move over. Then you just slow down, get your foot off the pedal and, you know, pass them. And that's it. So just pay attention. And it was good common sense legislation. That's what we can do. And we set a record passing that. We managed to pass that, I think, in 6 or 7 weeks. So, we pulled out all the stops. We did everything perfectly. We strategized, and we got it done. It's about 7 weeks. The other one here, Don, you could talk about this here. You know, the cost of insulin here, people can't afford. And some people, especially with the inflation, thank you, Joe Biden, and your failed economy, and Pete Buttigieg for failing us with transportation. People have to now decide between food and medicine. And, you know, one of Revy's relatives actually had to decide between food and medicine. We believe that she lost her life prematurely because of that choice, which the family didn't know. It's unconscionable to me that, you know, Tom Wolf and Joe Biden wants to throw money around, fly illegals in, you know, and give them great subsidies. But our own people have real needs, can't keep up the cost of insulin. Insulin's been around for 100 years, about a century, and it's still the rates for this in America are higher than most of the other countries around the world. And so something has gone wrong here, so we need to tighten this up and cap it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're a diabetic and you're on insulin or any of the medications for that matter, I mean, these are life's – I'm a diabetic myself. Now I'm type 2. I'm not type 1. But still, when you're paying out of pocket – medication is the difference between, you know, living or dying, and it should be affordable. I mean, you should not, these pharmaceutical companies should not be selling medication to foreign countries for less money than what they're charging the people in our country. You know, it's almost like they're price gouging their own citizens. So thank you, Senator, for pushing that forth. And so we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, I want to talk about the Medical Freedom Act that you guys worked on, the bill to require schools to allow parents to opt out from mask mandates, the protection from COVID-19 mandates. And I also want to mention the bill that you worked on that would protect people's unemployment benefits if they lost their job because of vaccination status. I'm Don Beichel Jr. and Joanne Suppressi here on the Conservative Voice, and we'll be right back with Senator Mastriano after this short break.
Hi, this is Don from the Conservative Voice. Are you hungry? Looking for great food at reasonable prices? Look no further than Oroso, a touch of Sicily, located at 530 Lincoln Highway, Business Route 1 in Fairless Hills, PA. Oroso's features a homemade, gluten-free menu for all their menu items and is a BYOB establishment. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner, and for breakfast Saturday and Sunday, Oroso offers everything from pizza, sandwiches, and appetizers to wonderful entrees that include seafood, pasta, and steak. So whether you're looking for a hearty breakfast, a quick lunch, or a wonderful dinner with your friends and family, Oroso is the place to go. Oroso is located at 530 Lincoln Highway, Business Route 1 in Fairless Hills, and can be found on the web at www.oroso.com. You can also give them a call at 215-295-1311, and you can also download their app from the Google Play Store. Oroso, the place your taste buds will thank you for finding.
This is Joanne from The Conservative Voice.
And this is Don from The Conservative Voice. Happy holidays and happy new year to everybody.
Okay, so we're back with State Senator Doug Mastriano. And so, Senator, before we left, we told the people that there was a few bills we want to talk about. So the big one was the Medical Freedom Act, SB 471, SB 885 is what I have written down here. But Medical Freedom Act, why don't you explain to the listeners what that was about and what you guys have been doing with that?
Well, I'm looking around here and I'm seeing that people are losing their jobs or being threatened with coercion and, you know, a year or two from retirement and making a choice between either getting a jab or getting canned. Many of these healthcare workers and many other career fields here. And I just can't believe that people across Pennsylvania are suffering coercion and punishment if they're forced and compelled to take a jab of something that has side effects and that's irreversible and that they have no choice in it. And for any Republican or Democrat to compare this to the polio shot, that's ridiculous, stupid nonsense, because the polio shot before it was issued worldwide, or even to the general population in America, had 25 years of research behind it. And so that, and even though people were dying of polio, it was very serious disease. The scientists and doctors could not release that because they'd suffer financial consequences, obviously, in court at the time. Now that no longer that's there. Meanwhile, the vaccine for COVID, we have only a year's worth of data, so we have no idea of the long-term effects on fertility, on heart damage, on blood clots. And we have lots of reports on VAERS of severe consequences. And so this needs to be truly a personal choice of individuals. And that I even have to say that or introduce legislation in Pennsylvania to affirm that is repugnant to me.
Yeah, it's really, I am at a loss for words with this, because I don't understand how in a country where you are supposed to be free to move, to do what you want, and make your own decisions, you now in New York City, you cannot go into a restaurant unless you show your papers. In January 3rd in Philadelphia, they are starting the same thing. You have to show your papers. And I'm not going to say vaccination card, because my medical records are private. I shouldn't have to show you anything.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, and pretty soon it's going to be, if you want to travel from here to there, they're going to want you to show your papers. I mean, we are degrading into communist Russia. I mean, this is the USSR coming full circle, and it's just, to me, I'm flabbergasted. They have used fear and intimidation to make people succumb to these socialist communist dictators, and that's what I'm calling them, because that's what they are.
Yeah, I agree, 100%.
Yep, it's a shame. So the one bill that you were working on was to protect people that they would at least get their unemployment benefits if they lost their job because of vaccination status.
And this, you know, all these bills, most of them anyway, this is because we actually care about the people. And when people contact us, you know, 90% of the time we get back to people. Sometimes folks get missed, so please reach out again if that's you. But they're like, this is happening to me. I'm being threatened with, I'm going to be fired. I'm not going to have any unemployment benefits because of the situation with COVID. And so obviously, if an employer wants to fire somebody, you know, for this ridiculous notion or reason, that individual should have access to unemployment, because this is a personal choice. Democrats, I don't forget your little cute little chant, you know, my body, my choice. It's funny you say that, when it's somebody else's body. It's a little baby girl or baby boy's body. It's not, you know, the mom's body. But it really is your body. The Democrat Party wants to give you no choice. This is one of the most personal decisions you can make on what goes into your body, this jab for COVID, and they want to deny you the right to have sovereignty over your own body. This shows you really what's behind the cards and what's behind that worldview. The Democrat Party has overstepped by infringing upon your freedoms in every regard.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm glad you just brought up, because I had it written down here, and I'm watching the time because there's some other things I want to get into. But the heartbeat bill, SB 378, I think that's a bill that I think is very important. It's something that you have championed for a long time. I know in the House, I believe Stephanie Borowitz is also pushing it on the House side. Explain to people what that bill is and what we're looking to accomplish and how we're progressing with that.
So the heartbeat bill will protect babies in the womb when a heartbeat can be detected, which is about 6 weeks. And there's about 30,000 abortions in Pennsylvania annually. And this would protect probably about 20,000. This would save 20,000 babies a year in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And it, you know, it's follow the science. If you're declared dead when you flatline, when there's no heartbeat, obviously you're alive when a heartbeat's detected. So if you hear a heart, you hear a life. Simple as that. Follow the science.
Yeah, exactly right. And I want people to be clear on this. You, as well as I, believe that life begins at conception. So this is not us changing our view at any means. But one of the things you and I have talked about before on this show is back in 1984. In the House of Representatives and Congress in Washington, D.C., a deal was kind of reached that since that time, there's been 63 million abortions in the United States. If we would have taken that deal back then, I believe the number of those 63 million, I believe 57 million of those babies would have been born at this point, if I remember my numbers correctly. And so
you're absolutely right. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things we always say is that perfect is the enemy of good. Yes, we would love for us to say life begins at conception because that's what we believe in. But let's use the tools of science to save as many lives as we possibly can while we work towards perfect.
Thank you. And in fact, when you had me on some months ago to talk about this, you know, one well-meaning young man who agrees with us on the issue of life, that it is at conception as I do, he jumped all over my case, and he was on my case for some time until I, you know, explained to him very clearly what the strategy is. Basically, he's an all or nothing guy. And so then my argument to him is, okay, why did Schindler save those 400 or 500 Jews? And since he couldn't save all 6 million, why even waste his time?
Right.
And then, of course, I explained to him the whole situation with Congressman Chris Smith and Congressman Henry Hyde, New Jersey and Illinois, respectively, when they had enough votes in the U.S. House to effectively end abortion, effectively, and the Democrats wanted the exceptions. They wanted, you know, incest, rape, and health of the mother. That was their argument back then. And the Republicans were all or nothing. And because of that, we got nothing except 60 million dead babies on our hands here. If anyone with any sound reason, and anyone that really claims they've cared about babies, they'd be like, yes, we'll agree to that this year, and next year we'll take our next step. The Democrats do that. They're smarter than us. They strategize. They're not all or nothing. Like, okay, we'll work with you. And that's how they constantly win. Republicans, if you can save 20,000 babies next year with a heartbeat bill, would you vote for that? Or are you going to, like, all or nothing? So, you know, forget those 20,000. I want all 30,000 saved. I want them all saved, too. The bottom line is here, science is on our side. I believe the courts are going to be on our side here once we get the result out of Washington, D.C. on Roe v. Wade, you know, vis-a-vis Texas. But we have to take steps in the right direction here. And if we can't get all or nothing right now, if we can't get all, we'll get nothing. Okay, that's going to end. Then we have to incrementally move forward and save as many babies as we can, using the tools at our disposal. You know, back then there was still a lot of pro-life Democrats. You know, back then we had a pro-life Democrat governor, Casey. Sadly, his son is nothing like that.
Right.
And you know, so back then we had the chance, and we squandered that by being ridiculous. Slavery ended not because in England that they did it constitutionally and legally without war. That's the way you want to do this. William Wilberforce, you know, spent 47 years in his legislative body as a minister of parliament in England, finding ways to limit slavery, and he did it very shrewdly. He cut at the edges, and then finally, after cutting at the edges, he's able to take it down completely. That's going to have to be our approach with pro-life issues.
Yes. Well, before we run out of time, I do want to talk about what we're going to do moving forward, but I just want to mention a couple other of the bills, even though we don't have time to discuss them. You guys passed, a bill was passed, you approved it, for parents to have access to the curriculum updates from in their school districts, a bill to require schools to allow parents to opt out from a mask mandate. You passed constitutional carry in the state of Pennsylvania, which Governor Wolf vetoed. You voted to ban COVID-19 mandates for children to attend school. One of the big things you guys passed was legislative divestation of Pennsylvania funds from companies controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. Like I said, I have lists of them, and so your quest to become governor of Pennsylvania has not deterred you from working for the people of Pennsylvania. So let's talk about what's coming up next. January 8th, we got an announcement coming up. We all kind of know what it is. But I think what's going to happen is that some of the supposedly Republican opponents are going to be blown out of the water for what we got coming up here.
It is going to be incredible, and I'll quote from 45. It's going to be huge. On Saturday, 8 January, 1 o'clock in south of Gettysburg, we're going to have a big announcement. We're going to have some fantastic A-list speakers there. We're going to have people from across the nation and across the state. We're going to have fantastic music. It's going to be a celebration. I'm expecting a huge crowd there, so please do register. You have to register. You have to have a photo ID uploaded there for security, obviously. And so it's going to be fantastic, and it's going to be the beginning of a movement here to take back our state.
And to register, they can go to www.doug4gov.com. And you can register on there, and as Senator Mastriano said, you will have to upload a driver's license photo. If you have children, just upload your photo. We can figure out that they're part of your family, so that's not an issue. And we hope to see you guys on January 8th. Senator, thank you, and we'll talk to you again. I don't know about next week because we got a lot going on, but maybe the week after that.
Thank you, and Happy New Year. Wishing everybody out there in Pennsylvania a great 2022. The best is yet to come.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir, and Happy New Year to everybody from Joanne and I here at The Conservative Voice. Have a great New Year's Eve, everybody.